You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello, basketball friends. This is Eric Corrine coming to you live from my basement. This is Jurassic Pod, episode 6. I'm here with my friend, my colleague. She's fighting through it today. She's, the Raptors are undermanned, and Holly McKenzie knows she needs to give good minutes today. How you doing, Holly?
I am good. I just have allergies that are just like out of control. It happens every time the seasons change.
Yeah, it's so weird for it to happen in winter. Yeah, it's weird for it to happen in winter. Like everything's dead in winter.
I don't
quite understand what is giving you an allergic reaction, but I know from the past that this is a thing that happens literally every season change for you.
Every season to me for about a week. It's very weird, but here I am.
What do you think would happen if you lived in California, like LA, and it were just like 22 and sunny, or San Diego maybe, 22 and sunny every day of the year?
Why don't we live in LA? I know that you always used to do that. You always used to say during winter when we'd walk home from practice, you would be like, why did my family settle here?
Yeah, why did my grandparents just stop there? Like, why did they stop where the bad weather was?
It is crazy, though. I sometimes think, how much of a different person would I be if I had grown up somewhere where it was just warm all the time, where there wasn't winter, where you didn't have winter clothes, where there wasn't snow? Like, just imagine watching a movie with snow and thinking, wow, I've never had that.
Oh, it's funny you mentioned that, because I asked Scotty Barnes yesterday after the game what he thought of the snow.
This was unplanned, by the way.
Yeah, absolutely. Just a natural synchronicity. And because he was in like a parka and a toque, and like it looked like he was bundled up for the, I've got to say, like the pretty nice snowfall we got. Like that was compared to like a bunch of gray days where it was like 3 degrees and rainy or whatever. Like I'll take a snowy day any day of the week if those are my two options. He said he didn't actually go outside, but it looked nice from his window, but he was garaging it, I guess, in the spirit of Kawhi Leonard, our old pal. But yeah, he seemed unfazed by it.
Good.
Yeah. Adapting well. Like,
I do feel like for NBA players, the weather is almost an like overstated convo when it comes to locales, because one, you're only in whatever city that you are signed with for, you know, maybe 8-9 months, maybe 10 at best, I guess. But even
not even 10, like the season starts at the end of September and ends at latest in like middle of June. So that's, you know. That's not even 9. That's like 8.5 months at the longest.
I can't do math. Yeah. You know this. But even then, in those months that you're in the city that you are playing for, you're only there half of the time. And then, like you said, you can go garage to garage and chauffeur to chauffeur. You don't have to be outside if you don't want to be.
Yeah, and let's face it. Like, they're avoiding being outside a lot of the time because they don't want to get stopped a bunch of times. That's not to say they don't enjoy the weather on occasion if they're in, you know, nice locales or they live in a nice locale, but like it's not like they are necessarily as great outdoors as your like a Los Angeles Laker, let's say, is probably not outside as much as the average Los Angelino, unless he's like outside in his own home, I would assume.
Right.
Anywho.
This is where being an NBA player is nice, though, because you're definitely going to have your own yard and space and during a pandemic as someone who lives in Toronto.
Yeah.
And doesn't have a house. That's something that I do think about.
I was very jealous of Norm Powell, who I forgot if his home is in Las Vegas or Los Angeles. I'm not really sure where he was during the pandemic, but there was just like, you know, him and his dogs. Like, he had a few Instagram videos of him and his Pomskis, Apollo and Old Odin. And I was like, in his property. And I was like, that seems nice. Not going to lie.
That does seem nice. Do you, whenever I see Norm's dogs, I'm reminded, I don't know if you remember this. Do you remember when his dog was injured and
I know exactly where you're going, but go ahead.
I saw the photo of it and I had a reaction.
In the Raptors locker room. Yes.
To it. And I said that his hand was hurt and Jonas Valanciunas didn't let me live down the fact that I was emotional and that I called an animal's limb a hand instead of a paw.
Yeah, so this was for full disclosure, and I promise we'll talk about the 2021-22 Raptors any moment now. But it was during Halloween, and he was dressed up in like a Batman costume.
Oh, and he was so cute. And so
you had your comment, and Jonas goes, first of all, that's dogs don't have hands, they have paws. And second of all, that's not a dog, that's Batman. which was legitimately one of the funniest things. I mean, certainly that Jonas, I ever heard Jonas say, not to say he wasn't funny, but like that was like the timing on that joke really worked well.
His delivery was great. Admittedly, I didn't realize I forgot in the moment that there were people around me, and it was a funny moment. And I think of that every time I see either of his beautiful dogs.
Since we last talked, Holly, first of all,
I know, can you tell him I'm prolonging it.
The Raptors played the final two games of the six-game road trip, the final five of which I correctly predicted on this podcast. Give me my praise. They played the last.
Deserved.
Yeah, thank you. They won in Memphis. Nice little comeback after a pretty dreadful defensive first half. Yuta Watanabe returns from a calf injury, plays 13 and a half minutes or so, is pretty good in that return, but mostly Fred VanVleet is awesome. Raptors beat the Grizzlies. A few days later, Ja Morant gets injured. At least it's not an injury that will require surgery. That's good.
Thank goodness.
Raptors lose to end the trip in Indiana. That was a game that kind of got progressively ugly. The depth problem that has been exposed by a few injuries really revealed itself. The Raptors are having trouble finding a cohesive bench, and they clearly ran out of gas as the game was going on. And that story kind of repeated itself against the Celtics, who won by 12 in Toronto on Sunday. The Raptors fall to 9-12, ranking ninth offensively, 25th defensively in the league.
Yeah, that's ugly.
And I actually thought that Sunday was a marked improvement on the defensive end. I thought they were doing more of the right things. But I think the overall takeaway right now is that this team is feeling very, very thin right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed. You know, again, you were right another time a couple episodes ago when you told me don't wait for everyone to be healthy because that's not going to happen during an NBA season. And yes, we know that.
Yeah. Even if it does, correct. It will be fleeting. You know.
So you were really, really, the team's really, really feeling the loss of Kem. I mean, he's out right now with knee swelling. That's
unexplained knee swelling. Yeah. You love to see it.
It's a little worrisome. Hope that he's back soon. Obviously, OG and Anunoby still out with the hip injury.
Hip pointer.
Is it a hip pointer? Yeah, hip pointer. Yeah. That's what I thought. But then I thought,
The hip, it's pointing.
Yeah, who am I forget? Who
Gary
am I
Trent.
Forgetting?
Gary Trent. Gary Trent sort of kicked accidentally in the calf.
In the calf, right?
Yeah, this franchise has a good history with calf strains, so it'll probably be fine.
And then also, he's playing, but I noticed on the trip that Scotty Barnes was really having some trouble with that thumb during that last game of the trip in Indiana,
yeah,
which coincidentally is where he hurt the thumb in the first place.
Indeed, he hurt himself in the last or second last possession of the game in Indiana, and he actually had himself subbed out against Indiana this time around at the end of the first half and came back to having a really effective second half, just as he did against Boston on Sunday after a pretty quiet second half or first half, sort of following in that pattern. Career high for three-pointers. He said he'd never taken 9 three-pointers in a game before, and without checking the stats, I'm just going to believe him. But before we get to Scotty and other things, I wrote about Fred VanVleet on Sunday. Some quick stats for you, Holly. Fred VanVleet has played 763 minutes so far this year. That's third in the league behind Jason Tatum and Miles Bridges. Per game at more than 38, he leads the league.
Yeah.
When he's played, the Raptors outscore their opponents by 53 points. In the 245 minutes he has not played, the Raptors have been outscored by 70 points. This is starting to sound a little Kyle Lowry-ish to me, and in a good way, but also in a very, very worrisome way, given what we first talked about. Right. So I guess my first question is, how concerned are you about the extent to which the Raptors, if they want to win games, have to rely on Fred VanVleet right now?
The short answer, I'm concerned. Very. Fred's been great, like you said, and I know that sometimes coaches and players as well will say that media and people who are not actually playing the game themselves put too much stock on minutes, and that, you know, if a player feels fine, it's just, it happens. There are going to be games where players have to play big minutes. But the problem is, basically for the reasons you just said, for the Raptors to be successful and win or even have a chance at winning most of these games, Fred's not having to play big minutes here and there. It's every night, and it's the load of the minutes. Again, we talked about this last week. It's not just that he's playing 40 minutes or whatever, 37 I think you said that he's averaging.
38.
It's not just that he's playing those 38 minutes. It's that so much, he's extending so much of himself on both ends of the floor, it is worrisome. And especially with a player like Fred, we've talked about it before, this point itself, I know Fred will never tell you if he's tired. If Fred is hurt, if anything's going on, he's just going to go out there and he's going to push through it, because that's just the kind of guy and player he is. And my instinct is to protect those kind of players from themselves by not allowing them to be in the position where they could be overworked or play through something that, could cause any further issues. So, yeah, I think that's a huge problem. And I don't really know what you're going to do looking at things right now.
Let me give you some more stats, Holly.
Love it.
Last seven games, so that takes us to the start of the West Coast trip in Portland.
Yeah.
With Fred VanVleet on the court, they're scoring 115 points per 100 possessions, giving up 112, which is not good, by the way, for a net rating of +3. Which is pretty good overall. Like, if those were the overall results, you'd be pretty happy. And that was in 260 minutes. In 76 minutes that he sat, first of all, he sat 76 minutes over seven games. And that included
over 2 weeks.
And that included a few blowout losses. Now, I'm going to say Nick Nurse took those blowouts to... he was contesting them for a while when maybe he could have lighten the load, but I'm not gonna get too antsy about that anyway. So yeah, he in those minutes, whereas the Raptors were scoring 115 with him on the court, when he's been off, they've scored 96 points per 100 possessions. While the Raptors were giving up 112 per 100 with him on the court, they're giving up 124.2 with him off. While they had a net rating of plus 3 with him on the court, they have a net rating of minus 28.2 with him off the floor for a differential of 31 points.
It's honestly unbelievable. Like,
and so this is my roundabout way of saying I get where Nick Nurse is coming from. He has correctly...
Oh, absolutely.
He has correctly figured out... figure out is a strong phrasing. He has correctly diagnosed that when Fred VanVleet is not on the floor right now, the Raptors stink.
Harsh.
What do you call a team that has a net rating of minus 28.2, Holly?
Hurting. I call them hurting.
for point of context, the worst teams in the league for a season usually have a negative net rating of like 10 or 12 for the season. So
those numbers are staggering.
It's only 76 minutes.
Like it matches what we're seeing and what you know, but to actually hear it laid out like that is like, oh.
Yeah. And it's so, just like a total cratering on either end. And what I want to, like, taking it beyond VanVleet playing so much, what really worries me about it is that it shows a lack of alternatives to figure it out right now. And that's whether that's through a Pascal Siakam led offense or Malachi Flynn having a big role in the offense, or even those little stints where before his injury, Gary Trent was kind of, you know, doing his little dances and looking pretty good, honestly, with in his isolation attempts or his two-man game attempts. The Raptors just can't sustain anything with VanVleet off the floor, and that does not speak well to those. I mean, I don't want to criticize any of those players too much, because I think, like, in isolation, not in the play type, but just on their own, they've been, like, varying degrees of fine, but it is worrying that together they cannot prop up some sort of non-VanVleet alternative.
Yeah, it is. It's not good. And like you said, like, I'm not trying to criticize the coaching staff here, because the proof is right there in those numbers you gave. Like, I don't really know what the other alternative is, and it's not ideal. Unfortunately, I don't know. Obviously, you know, I'm going to say that I'm hoping for a bigger role for Malachi Flynn. He played well against the Celtics. He played, had 15 minutes, finished with 8 points, 3 rebounds, 3 assists. He took 8 shots. He was aggressive, which I really liked. I liked seeing him go to the rim. I just like seeing Malachi look confident and, you know, get some time. I'm hoping that he can continue to build on that for him, but also to hopefully try to relieve Fred. I don't know. I mean, the way I'm going to spin this, because I'm still stuck on when you said this stinks, because that's such an ugly word. Not saying it's not true. Yeah. is that Fred VanVleet is an all-star, or should be. I don't think that's going to happen unless the team has a much better record. And I think Fred himself has acknowledged that he's aware of the situation. He knows how these awards and accolades are usually given. But Fred's really freaking good, man. Like, whether it's on a great team or a struggling team, he's really, really good, and obviously he's everything to this Raptors team.
Yeah,
I do want to say, though, that I have, not to change topics, but I do think that we're seeing Pascal kind of get his feet back under him and get back into a rhythm, and that has been really good to see over the last few games of the road trip.
Before we move on, and I want to talk about both Flynn and Siakam, but to your last point, I agree. Like, the All-Star nod is unlikely, but a push should be made by the franchise and him for it if all of this continues. Because both those impact stats, but also just his individual numbers, which I don't have in front of me, like, merit consideration. But on Friday before the Indiana game, Rick Carlisle said, I don't think it's any stretch to say he's a great player, and I don't say the word great lightly, but when you factor in everything he's done in his career and his value to this team right now, he's a great young player. He's absolutely unafraid when it comes to big shots, big situations, and he has an impeccable sense of timing when they need a big shot, even if it's in the non-crunch time part of the game. And we know, like, that, you know, his offensive acumen and shot making is only part of what he does out there. But, but you know, people who know things are noticing. And, you know, not that it really matters. Like, we all know that Van Vliet is appreciated throughout the league. But occasionally there's some insecurity in this fan base and just about being a Canadian and a Torontonian in general when you're viewing yourself in contrast to the United States. So it's always nice to hear those things.
If Rick Carlisle had said that I had an impeccable sense of anything, that quote would be cut out and plastered all over my wall so that it was the first thing I saw in the morning and the last thing that I saw at night.
Yeah, so that's cool. Malachi Flynn, I think to wrap up the Van Vliet discussion and to head into the Flynn discussion is, like, regardless of the outcome of how those minutes are going, I think, and Nick Nurse said that, you know, the almost 40 minutes that Van Vliet played was probably, you know, two or three too many on Sunday. I think they've got to make some sort of effort to keep the minutes down, just because we know how hard those minutes are watching them. So I'm ready to give Flynn an extended run at the backup point guard minutes and have a healthy share of them be without Van Vliet on the floor, like, because that's just what you have to do if you want to preserve this player. And if it means sacrificing a win or two, like, we're talking a lot about the future every week. What is the season about? Saying that, the offense, you know, I think you're right in that he is creating some decent looks for both himself and for teammates. The problem when you refer to those eight shots is he created like three wide open mid-rangers for himself. And I know, like, mid-rangers aren't sexy, but, you know, given the realities of the Raptors offense, when they have an open shot, you need to,
we're taking
you
them.
Need to knock them
we're
down.
Taking and, what we have.
And Flynn did create a share. The problem is he missed all three of those open mid-rangers. And at some point, he's got to start knocking down those looks he's creating. And his teammates have to start knocking down the open threes, fewer of which I can recall, to be fair. And that's just not happening. So I'm pretty much with you on Flynn, but I think you need to let him live through those missed shots and so he can know he can afford to miss some shots and do the things that he's been pretty good at doing. But we can't say he's killing these minutes.
Right. And I think that the last point of what you made is really, really something that stands out to me too, is especially coming into this season where I don't think it would be a stretch to say that pretty much everyone who follows this team would have assumed that after Fred, it would have been Malachi to be getting the majority of the point guard minutes.
Or Goran.
Coming into the season, once it kind of became clear that that wasn't happening, yeah. I think that would have been the assumption. So the fact that that didn't happen, I think that mentally that does kind of have to make a player question what's going on. So the fact that he is getting this time, I do think he needs to have a continued stretch of these minutes so that he's not looking to the sideline when he misses a shot or there's a turnover or something happens. Like, you never want a young player constantly looking to the bench for approval or to feel like they're still going to be in the game. And I'm hopeful for the Malachi minutes. I don't know. I felt good watching, even though, like you said, he did miss some shots. But hey, who didn't miss some shots last night? The Raptors shot like 36%. But yeah, I thought that was a good start for him, and I hope it continues. Were you surprised? You mentioned Goran. Were you surprised about the news that he will not be with the team?
Yeah, it's a hard one to talk about because, you know, personal circumstances were...
Obviously, we hope everything is okay.
Saying that, like, we know how it looks given, like, particularly how the Al Horford situation in Oklahoma City played out last year. So, I mean, I guess I'm kind of surprised that it's that we're here, and I just don't really feel comfortable speculating beyond that. From a team point of view, I think it just makes it harder to imagine
right.
that they're going to be able to trade him at any point for anything you know that the team would want. And I think, like, more and more, if and when Goran Dragic returns to the Raptors or the NBA, we're probably heading for a buyout situation. That could change, but right now that's how it's seeming. And I don't want to have a whole conversation about the Kyle Lowry non-trade then sign and trade. But, you know, that potential outcome does not help, you know, come to peace with what did happen. Pascal Siakam.
Well, I first want to say, obviously, of course, I hope that things are as good as can be. But I did think it was really nice when Nick was asked, I don't know if it was before the game.
I think it was before.
He was asked about Goran and he just said, like, what a nice guy he was to coach and to be around. And he was a really enjoyable person. And you know that I'm kind of a Goran stan. I enjoy him a lot as a person. And I will always remember the series between the Raptors and the Heat, which you tell me you don't remember, which I don't know. I feel like you were with me in the scrums, but I digress. That was a series where Kyle was struggling.
I remember the
mightily.
Series. Yes.
And reporters took to asking Goran about it, which is kind of a weird move just in general to ask an opponent about their opponent struggling in the playoffs. And, you know, players can be kind of cagey, especially in the postseason, depending on how things are going. And I just remember this was kind of like my first like introduction to Goran, like talking to him and things like that. I was so blown away by how much time he had for those questions and just how thoughtful and complimentary he was of Lowry and his talent, and also the mental side of like when you're in a slump and how of course he'll get out of it, and you know, him saying like everyone is talking to him about this, I'm sure you guys are writing about it, I'm sure he sees it from his family and his friends, and da, 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 and just saying like he'll get out of it, like when players go through it, it feels awful when you're in it, and but you always bounce back. And I know I'm probably rambling here, but I just thought that was such a telling piece of Goran the person, that he would have that empathy and also just time for media during the playoffs to talk about his opponent struggling rather than, you know, himself or his team excelling. And that sort of began, that sort of was the beginning of my appreciation and fandom for Goran, that it was nice to hear Nick say that last night, and I hope all is well.
Let me add, out of practice on Monday, Precious Achiuwa, who was, of course, teammates with him last year in Miami, said, I was thinking about this yesterday. Goran's the oldest point guard on the team. He had the most years in the league on the team, arguably the most experience. And just losing that veteran experience, veteran leadership, and someone that you could go ask questions to, he's basically seen everything. It's big. Mm-hmm. I know it's not just myself that goes to him for questions and stuff like that. I always ask him, what does he see during the course of a game? And he tells me, hey, do this or don't do this or approach it that way. And that's what he brings to the team. And he went on to say that, you know, Scottie Barnes is often going to him. So for a young team, like beyond, you know, what he could provide on the court, like I think for a young team, losing every bit of, you know, veteran experience, as like cliched and as that can get at the time when there's such a dearth of it, like every little bit is that more important. And so I was surprised in from that sense that that things have turned out this way for now. But again, without knowing what's going on, let's just hope the best for him, and maybe he'll be back in a Raptors uniform even if it seems unlikely in the present moment.
Yeah, I should apologize. I didn't mean to phrase that as
I understand. It's a weird situation. It's a weird situation. Yeah. I think we can all talk about it and acknowledge that it's a weird situation. But the truth is, we just don't know everything about what's happening.
And we just wish the best for him. That quote made me want to cry. That was, that says it all.
Yeah.
Quaron, big fan.
Great man. Pascal Siakam, the other guy I mentioned, mm-hmm. when it comes to those non-Van Vliet minutes that just have not been working out. On the whole, you know, I think his numbers are fine. He's averaging 17.7 points, 7.2 rebounds, 3.6 mm-hmm. assists per game, shooting 46% from the field, 35% from three, which is certainly better than last year. You know, I don't think his defense has been where you want it to be mm-hmm. yet, but hey, welcome to the club. I think like on an individual level, we can be pleased with where right. he is, but it's that old Siakam conversation, right? Like if he's right. so good and if he can put up these stats, why isn't it impacting team success a little more? And while saying that, I should also note that along with Van Vliet, he was a -2 against Boston, which suggests that the minutes he didn't play were a much bigger problem than the minutes he did play. But overall, he's obviously not having the same mm-hmm. impact that Van Vliet is. And when you're playing, and here we go, when that much of your salary cap, of the money you spend, is devoted to one guy, you want him to impact winning. And as fine and even as good as he's been on his return, that's not quite happening yet. So what are your overall thoughts on Siakam so far?
Yeah, again, I almost hate to bring the conversation up because it's such a hot topic. But I think I'm not as down, not that you were down, but I think I'm a little more positive, shocker, I'm a little more positive about the situation than Eric is. I just felt like we're seeing him look a little more comfortable, and whether that is just getting some more games in or getting his conditioning back, he's playing pretty big minutes in the past few, which, you know, mm-hmm.
He's averaging 33 minutes a game, and if you take away that first game where he played 24, like it'd be a lot higher. So I mean, not a lot higher, but a minute or two higher, and he'd just be another Raptor averaging 35 or more minutes a game.
No, but I do think that is showing that his conditioning is improving and is pretty much at game. Full game speed, whatever, 100%. So that is a positive to me. And I think the game against the Celtics just annoyed me. You know my thoughts on the Celtics. You know how I feel about this. I come out of every game against the Celtics, even the games they win, just feeling super negative about everyone, and that's not like me, so I feel like I need to almost counterbalance that to get back to what I actually think, because I don't like seeing the Celtics. It would have been nice if a couple more three-pointers would have fallen from Pascal. Didn't hit any last night.
I think overall we can be taking that last point you made about not living too much in the immediate wake of whatever game we've seen. Like, you can, I would be slightly optimistic about where we are right now in the Pascal is back experience. Mm-hmm. But saying that, I really, at some point, hopefully soon, need to see that
more.
But not just from him. I need to see what he's doing impact the team more. And I think a lot of that has to come on defense. And and this is where, everything connects. Like, if OG Anunoby and Kem Birch are out there, mm-hmm. the defense is better. it's not rocket science. You could say whatever you want about Pascal Siakam's individual defense, and I don't think it's been particularly good so far, But if OG Anunoby and Ken Burch are out there, he's trying to do a bit less. He isn't scrambling quite as much, probably. And it just, you know, it's not the load, as we were talking with Van Vliet, like what he's being asked to do is not that much. The problem, again, is he's one of your best players, right, and you're always asking your best players to do a lot of things. And so I'm not quite there on Siakam yet, while acknowledging that I'm more positive than not with where.
Yeah, the injuries thing is hard because, like you said, they're always going to be there, and you don't want to put too much weight into that because there are issues outside of that, obviously. But like, you look at the box score from the game against Boston on Sunday, and like, Svi's playing 38 minutes. I mean, that's asking a lot from him. That's a bigger role than I think he probably could have anticipated. I think that, yeah, going from Kem and OG to Precious and Svi is, that's a lot. That's like a lot to try to fill. And you see that, especially defensively. You just see that the pieces, they don't really match up as well without those guys out there.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Before we move on to a few smaller, I mean, not smaller, but maybe, you know, more future-minded or more esoteric topics, Yuta's back. Yuta Watanabe returned against Memphis, played 13 and a half minutes, sat out a game for injury management or whatever their injury recovery, played 13 and a half against Boston, in which the Raptors, I believe, played very well in those minutes. Let's look.
Yes, Boston. Yes,
they were plus 15 in his 13 and a half minutes. Build the whole
a team best.
Build the whole 15. Plane out of Yuta Watanabe. That's what I say. And that's even as he missed three mostly wide open 3-pointers and went 1-for-4 in total. Early thoughts on Utah's return. And, you know, Nick Nurse said that he has to take it very slowly with Watanabe for the risk of re-injuring him. Obviously, the calf injury is for him at least, is a very complicated one, as we saw from his 6.5 or 7 week recovery that had a setback in it. But what have you seen from Utah? And I'm just going to editorialize and say I'd like to see more of it.
Yeah, I would like to see more of it. It's just great to see him out there. And like you said, the plus 15 in 14 minutes last night, he wasn't 1-of-4. He was 1-of-4 from three. Yeah. He was actually 1-of-6, which really shows just the impact that he has on the game, even if he's not necessarily making his shots or scoring. And I think we knew that like before this return, that just his impact, his knowledge and awareness of the game, but also the energy that he plays with, he brings such a boost when he comes into the game off the bench. And he's also just a really smart player, so that even if his stats aren't like eye-popping, or even if you were to first look at it and say 1-of-6, ooh, he might not have had a good game, he actually makes a huge difference on both ends of the floor, just making things function smoother. And yeah, his return, his first game back, it was just great to see him out there. And the smiles he had were awesome. And after the game, I noticed like he posted to his Instagram like a bunch of photos of him playing and just a caption saying how happy he was to be back. And oh my goodness, this was his first time playing this season. Like, I knew that. But when you actually think about it, this injury has taken so long to heal that I'm just glad that he's back and am looking forward to more. You?
He's been good and I've enjoyed it. And I've enjoyed that Nick Nurse has used two challenges on Utah for fouls, both of which he won. That was cool. And yeah, like I think I missed
last night's. When was last night's
it
challenge?
It happened like right away. In the beginning of the game, he got put in for Scotty Barnes, who was pulled early after two turnovers, right. And he like went up vertically to challenge Jaylen Brown and was called for a defensive foul, and it was switched to an offensive foul.
One thing you know about Utah is he's always going to challenge any shot. And he talked about that after the Memphis game. Yeah. I loved that he brought up the dunk from last season, the Anthony Edwards dunk.
I mean, he didn't say it out loud, but you know that's what he was talking about.
Yeah. He's just great. And he just seems like a delightful person as well.
I believe the quote was something like 100 times out of 100, I'm going to jump. Yeah. Like trying to block the shot.
Right. I missed the start of the Raptors game last night because I was covering Canada basketball, the men.
We will get to that momentarily. What I really wanted to say about Utah, and I couldn't think of in the moment you asked me, is what you see from him is like length and athleticism, the type that the Raptors, you know, obviously like, combined with like a near mastery of the schemes versus some of the other players who have similar qualities, but whether it's just being new to the team or being slower to grasp the concepts, or just being more error prone for whatever reason. I won't say a player's name who was given a DNP last night by coach's decision. He just knows where to be and what to do in a complex system. And when you combine that with his physical skills, which are, you know, pretty notable, I think, you know, there's no wonder Nurse likes him. Like he's a wonderful fit and a wonderful role player for this team.
And I think missing the amount of time that he did, as like shitty as that is, look at me not freaking out because I said shitty.
Yeah, you still have to comment on it, but you did it.
I did because I thought, am I allowed? Yeah. I'm allowed. I just rattled myself to not thinking about Utah. Yes, being out always sucks, is shitty, but for a player like Utah, who already has such a great understanding just of the game in general, but also of this team's schemes, all of that time on the sideline, like, you know that he's picking up what's happening and seeing ways that he can come in and improve some of those areas that they are lacking. And like, he's learning his teammates from the sideline. Like, you know that those games that he wasn't playing, he was using them to further like his education into how he could improve. And that's why I'm really excited to see, like, once he's hopefully, you know, fully back and over this recovery management kind of phase of being in and out, I'm curious to see where his minutes will end up, and I'm really curious to see his impact of the game, because like you said, it's obvious that Nick loves him. Why wouldn't you? He seems like the kind of dream player to coach. And yeah, I have a lot of high hopes for Utah.
Quick question. Let's live in a world in which the Raptors get slightly healthier over the next few weeks.
I want to live in that world.
Well, you're not going to live there. Want to live there once I ask the question I'm about to ask.
No.
Do you think...
Why are you doing this to me?
Because I'm a bad person who likes decent content.
Who likes drama?
Delano Banton... Yes or no for an extended run in the G League?
If everyone is healthy and if Malachi is going to be getting extended minutes and Delano's going to be playing 3 minutes, then yes, because I just don't think it makes sense to have a guy playing like 5 minutes or less if he's as talented and has as much potential as Delano does. You know, might as well be out there playing. But I hate that I'm saying that because I want him to be with the Raptors.
Well, remember, getting sent to the G League isn't a demotion.
It isn't. Look at Fred VanVleet and Pascal Siakam.
Fred VanVleet barely played in the G League, but sure, let's continue.
But he loves to talk about how.
Yeah. Yeah, I just asked that not only because of the 3 minutes, but the Raptors over the West Coast trip, I think were moving away from like the Banton as point guard minutes, and whether it was with Flynn or with Van Vliet, many of them were with Van Vliet, as you could have guessed by the first conversation. That's how those minutes have been going. And if you see Delano Banton as, you know, a lead creator, I think, you know, 30 minutes in the G League in that role a night versus 10 minutes as a secondary guy per night might be more beneficial for his long-term growth. That's sort of my thinking. I don't think he's been bad. I just think he's getting, like, his growth is potentially being limited by being put in that role versus being put in a different role that he could eventually fill with this team.
Ideally, I would like for the team to find a role for him that keeps him on the floor now. I have a hard time talking about Delano because I just feel so strongly about him already that it's hard to be impartial. But yeah, I think if he's going to be playing 3 minutes, then I would much rather see him getting some run and continuing to develop into whatever kind of player he's going to be with 905. Yeah.
So before we wrap up,
I didn't know you were going to ask that, and I'm...
I know. So I like to keep you on your toes. I don't... You do a very good job of writing a rundown, and then I do a very good job of vaguely paying attention to it. As you wrote on the rundown, anything from practice or on the road this week, you asked me. I did, and the opposite of my flight to Portland, which was very stressful for... I forgot if I mentioned it last week, for the ladies who were having a good time dancing in their seats with one another while not wearing masks over their noses.
No, you did not mention this.
Yeah, that wasn't great. I won't go into detail. I'm writing about, I'm doing like a little essay on the return to travel right now for that's gonna fall, and like how I've missed it so much, and yet there's this added layer of anxiety that makes me queasy every time I do it. So that story. So I don't.
Do you
I don't feel give
angry
away...
when you see?
Yes. Like,
do you
this...
feel angry when you see stuff like that? Because I feel like I'm generally not an angry person, but when I see people disrespecting rules about something that is so important and that can cause other people not just like extreme harm, but also anxiety in the moment, it makes me furious. Yeah, and, this... and I don't know how to deal with that anger because I'm not used to it.
Yeah. In this case. Here's what I'll say. I try not to begrudge people good time. I often fail at that, but I try not to begrudge people.
You can have a good time with a mask on.
A good time. And so I was trying not to focus on like the dancing or whatever, because like technically they weren't doing anything wrong. Like, I think it's kind of rude to be on a 7 across in a like 7 seat across in a row, 5 hour flight, and like dancing and being kind of loud in like a night flight. Like, I think that's kind of, you know,
where were you flying?
Atlanta
to flying...
Portland. Because I flew through Atlanta to Portland like an idiot.
Okay. Sorry, in my mind, the only time I've really seen like wild flights have been like to Vegas.
Yeah, and this
you know?
Wasn't
and
wild.
Then it
was literally
sense.
These two people, just these two people, who, by the way, another layer of this is they were sharing ear pods. And one of them dropped and lost the ear pod twice and like tried to get like the rows in front and behind her to look for the ear pod. And like, I thought like, okay, now you're going to start to take other people's feelings into consideration. Nope. They did find the ear pods, and like halfway through the flight, they passed out.
Oh my! Okay.
So I think they might have been on drugs. Or like a lot of alcohol, and they just crashed hard.
My take is that you could do all of those things with a mask on, and I wouldn't be as angry. So that's my
takeaway. I frankly don't know which part of it was making me the angriest. Like, I can't isolate the behaviors because they all happened in concert with one another. I'd love to say it was just the mask thing that was bothering me, but I don't think it was. Anyway, in contrast to that experience, I was moved to an exit seat on my flight back from San Francisco to Detroit, from which I was going home to Toronto. So obviously the longer flight. So that was sweet for us six footers in the world. I watched Minari, which I know, I believe you
saw. Are you 6 feet tall?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I think you saw Minari, right?
What's Minari about again?
The Asian American family, or Korean American family, I believe, that moves to, or maybe it's Chinese, that moves to Arkansas and start a family and start a farm there. They move from LA.
Oh my goodness! Sorry. Well, for some reason, I was thinking of. Never mind. I was thinking of an animated movie. Never mind. Yes, I have absolutely seen that movie. It is incredible.
Yeah, you really liked it. And I did not like it as much as... Like, I liked it. I liked it, but I think here's my problem. I'll let you express why you really liked it.
Yes, we should probably keep it
short. But I think I went in expecting a bit more of a coming-of-age movie. And I think coming-of-age movies are pretty much... Like, that's my favorite genre.
Especially poignant,
And it was more of a movie about marriage. Which, you know, is also trenchant, but I guess as a, in terms of expectations and a genre, I would not as readily and excitedly watch. So I was a bit surprised. I think it was a very effective movie and successful movie, but it wasn't exactly what I wanted. So I didn't end up liking it as much as I thought I would.
I'm very surprised. I loved that movie. Why my brain was going... anyway, whatever. I'm sick. Let's just write it off as that.
Are you thinking of Moana?
No. That's the thing. Like, I don't even know what I was thinking of. I was, like, grasping at straws, being like, what is he talking about? But yeah, of course, Minari. It's funny that you described it as a movie about marriage, because I actually, that's not what I took from it at all. To me, the actor who played the son was incredible and amazing.
And the grandmother. She won an Oscar.
Amazing talent. And that was where I was going next, was the grandma. To me, it was really a story about family and about, you know, coming here and all of the ups and downs along that way. And just the relationship between the grandson and the grandmother was one of the most beautiful things like I've ever seen depicted in film. And the ending, I mean, I don't want to spoil anything, but just I was not ready. I mean I get emotional quite often at artistic avenues, be it movie or TV or music or concerts or books, the ones that really stick with me are the ones that, like, I'll be doing the dishes like 2 days later and I have tears in my eyes because I'm thinking about the characters or I'm thinking about the end of the movie. And that happened with that movie for me. I really could not get enough, reading every review that I could, every interview with the cast, watching all of them on YouTube. And I kept thinking about those characters in that movie, in that setting, for days after. And it was just so moving and so beautifully done in an understated way. I didn't expect to talk about this. Sorry, you really have taken me for a loop today. Amazing movie. Highly recommend that you watch it if you haven't.
Yeah, I will echo that relationship in particular is very good. And the acting across the board was very good. I guess it wasn't exactly where I thought it was going to go. Or what I thought it was going to be, I should say, before seeing it. So my expectations
were upended a little bit. To be honest, I also thought it was
a little bit.
I came into it thinking that it was going to be more of what you expected as well. I thought that the little boy was going to be little at the beginning, and then I thought it was going to go through like his life, like as he got older. So I had no idea what it was actually about in the end, but I really loved it.
Yeah.
Like, it was not what I expected going in.
Yeah. That's what I mean, you're talking to a person whose two favorite movies of the 2010s were Moonlight and Boyhood. That's my jam. And this was...
I don't have a favorite movie, you know that? I would have no idea what to say if someone said, what's your favorite movie?
Yeah.
I don't have a clue.
I used to... Anyway. When I was a kid, I used to say it was Independence Day. It was not.
I've never seen that.
Will Smith, Jeff Goldblum, aliens, save the world.
How many alien movies has Will Smith been in?
a
Is it Men in Black?
Men in Black, aliens? Yeah. There's aliens. Yeah. That's more of a comedic Independence Day is like an action movie, Men in Black.
About aliens. Yeah. I didn't know that. Wow, okay.
You've been watching Canada basketball. Over the Bahamas on Sunday. Play again on Monday, which will definitely be after you, dear listener, have listened to this podcast.
Yes.
So for the listeners who haven't been able to follow along, I guess, what is the purpose of these games? And who is on this Canadian team? And what's stood out so far?
The thing about FIBA is that there is a lot of games and a lot of tournaments leading into the actual tournaments. So right now, Canada is in the Dominican Republic, and they are there for the first of six windows of competition leading up to qualifying for the FIBA Basketball 2023 World Cup.
Yeah, well, I mean, for anybody who follows soccer... it's similar to that, and you know, Canada soccer on the men's side is having a moment right now. So it's a lot like that, I think we can say, but continue.
Yeah, so right now it's the FIBA Basketball World Cup Americas qualifiers. So they are in the Dominican to play two games against the Bahamas on Sunday and Monday. Sunday's game, Canada won dominantly. They had 115-73 win. And they're going to play the Bahamas again shortly after we finish this call, actually. But yeah, it was a great game for Canada. They looked awesome offensively. It took the first couple of minutes of the first game was like back and forth between the teams. And then Canada just sort of found its rhythm and just went and didn't look back. Kyle Wilcher led the way for Canada, the veteran. He had 23 points on 13 shots. He was awesome. There was a lot of young guys who made their debut yesterday. AJ Lawson, Kenny Cherie, who had 18 points. Their debut with the senior men's national team. They've previously been involved with the program. But there's some names that Raptors fans would know, I think. You know, Anthony Bennett was there. He had 8 points in the game. Anthony Bennett always shows up to these tournaments when they need him, which should be commended. The Scrub brothers were there. Phil Scrub had 11 assists to lead everybody. Yeah.
Carlton's finest.
Yeah, he had a really good game. Aaron Bess had 21 on 10 shots. He was awesome.
Former 905er.
Former 905er. Yeah, he played really well. And then another debut that happened yesterday was Kyle Alexander, who has played with the Miami Heat. He's the brother of Kayla Alexander, who plays for the senior women's national team. So that was pretty exciting to see him make his debut playing for Canada. And he had a great debut, finished with a double-double. He had 12 points and 12 assists and... Sorry, 12 points, 12 rebounds.
I was like, how many assists did they get? One guy is 11, one guy is 12. I mean, was this, a 40-assist game?
It's funny that you say that because they did finish with 31 assists on 42 field goals. So pretty good. Yeah. Pretty good assist to field goal ratio there. But yeah, they looked great. And they, you know, once they built their lead, they didn't look back. And it was really good to see. So, you know, we'll see how they do in the rematch on Monday. But for the Bahamas, kind of interesting, Klay Thompson's brother is playing for the Bahamas, Michael Thompson. So that was an interesting name that I didn't expect to see. And it was nice to see him making three-pointers, as the Thompson family seems to do quite well. But yeah, a big opening game for Canada in the first of six windows to qualify for the World Cup.
Yeah, cool. Nate Bjorkgren, Raptors consultant, coaching that team. Nate Mitchell, Raptors assistant coach, also coaching. Cool stuff all around. Good luck to Canada. You can catch those games on Sportsnet. Good to see these things being covered. For sure. And you as well, covering it at Canada Basketball website.
Thanks.
shout out. You gotta get in your plug, Holly.
I'm better at plugging other people.
Yeah, it's because you're a writer and you have the same disease we all do.
Subscribe to The Athletic.
Yeah, you've missed
it. For all of your basketball content. If you're hearing this. And every sport, actually. Yeah,
if you're hearing this after Monday, you've missed your $1 a month window for the first year. But you can't say we didn't warn you last week. But you should still subscribe, because there won't be as good of a deal like that in quite some time. But it's still good value, I'd like to say, at the price you can get it. The Raptors game against Boston was the first of a 7-game homestand. They've got Memphis, as discussed, without Ja Morant on Tuesday. Got the Milwaukee Bucks on Thursday. Got the mighty Zards of the District of Columbia on Sunday. Then they will probably talk to you some point after that game. Then they've got Thunder, Knicks, Kings. What would be a good record is what you wrote here.
Now he's sticking to the outline.
I think if this club, I mean, this is an easier stretch. I think we have to concede, like, the only, like, really scary game in there, you know, with apologies to the Wizards, who have played good basketball to start the season. Like, the Bucks are obviously, the way they're playing right now and with the talent and history they have, that looks to be a tough game. The other five games, and even the Celtics game, which they have already lost, all winnable. Now, obviously, there's huge notes about health in there. OG Anunoby, as Nick Nurse said, has sort of plateaued in his recovery, and there's no timetable for his return, which I'll remind you doesn't mean anything other than it's unlikely he'll play Tuesday. Like, no timetable just means they can't say one way or the other. And if he had lots of good progress at the beginning, and, you know, he could have lots of good progress soon as well.
They're not getting our hopes up.
But yeah, none of him, Ken Birch, or Gary Trent practiced on Monday, which means it's unlikely they'll play on Tuesday. Saying that, I think you got to look to get at least 4 of these 6 games, right? Like that. See, and I know that's a lot of wins.
You say that as the Raptors currently are 2-7.
Sure, but if you're going to lose... If you're going to have a losing record on this homestand, you're probably looking like a team that's not making the that is positioned not to make the play-in or the playoffs.
Well, that's why I asked this, because I wanted to say, like, the importance of this homestand.
So what would
this is over?
What would be a good record? 5-2. What would be an acceptable record? 4-3. What would be bad? Anything worse than that? I think that's where I stand.
I agree. I also agree with that. Yeah.
Other than that, I think I'm sort of, as we discussed, I want to see more from Yuta Watanabe. His minutes have been a joy. I want to see where the Scotty Barnes experience goes. We didn't talk. This is the least we've talked about Scotty Barnes.
I know.
After his 4-3-pointer game. There are still moments in that first half and the first half against Indiana where it's like, man, look at the rim. Look at the rim. Go to the rim. Like, you're big and strong and stuff. Do that.
But it does seem to take him a little bit of time each game to kind of get into being aggressive. But
when he does, I mean, it's really commendable that the guy can't seem to string 2 bad halves together.
He
figures it out, and that bodes well for his future development. Anything else you're looking to see?
No, I'm just looking at this list of guys coming through or teams coming through, and it'll be fun to see Dylan Brooks and Brandon Clark with the Grizzlies. But wow, I'm sad about Ja Morant and so thankful that he doesn't need surgery on his knee injury.
Yeah.
And you'll have Oklahoma City coming through, which is fun to have Shea and Lou Dort.
As I always say, in the spirit of Steve Holt from Arrested Development, Lou Dort. I think that's about it, Holly. I think you need to go get ready to watch a Canada basketball game. I need to finish rhapsodizing about what it's like to travel again in these perilous times.
I super look forward to reading that. Also, apologies to anyone listening for my coughing and or clearing the throat.
I think you sounded pretty good, Holly. I think you shouldn't be so hard on yourself in general.
Thank you.
Thanks, Holly, for joining me. We'll do this again this time next week.
Hopefully with a 5-2 record to talk about. 5-2 homestand.
Well, we won't
about.
Because they'll only have played 3 more games.
I mean overall. I mean See, I can't, my brain's a little there.
Well, go take a 20-minute nap and get ready to write about Canada basketball.
Yeah.
People, subscribe to The Athletic. Thank you for listening to this year podcast. We'll see you next week. See ya!